I'm at St Vincent's in Melbourne today talking with Associate Professor David Pryor, who is the Deputy Director of Cardiology here. David, thank you for your time.
It's a pleasure.
Now, you're the lead author on a narrative review that is coming up in an upcoming issue of the NJA on pulmonary arterial hypertension. Tell us a little bit about PAH and prevalence and its consequences.
It's a rare condition. It's very uncommon, but for those who get it, it's a devastating disease. And if we go back to the bad old days, untreated, the average life expectancy was around 2 years. So it was pretty much a kind of death sentence for patients. But we're fortunate that, particularly in the last 10 years, we've had really significant advances in treatment that have really changed the outlook and quality of life for those patients.
Is it hard to detect?
It is a challenge to detect, and in fact, most of the evidence suggests there is a very significant delay between the onset of symptoms, the recognition that this is pulmonary arterial hypertension, and most research suggests that that's generally around 2 years. Because it's a bit like looking for a needle in a haystack, people don't look for it.
Is that because there are a lot of differential diagnoses?
Yeah, breathlessness is a common problem in our community. And there are many other causes that you would generally look for before considering pulmonary arterial hypertension. And I think that's essentially what happens in the community.
What's the gold standard for treatment now?
That's a moving target. I think that most people working in the area would feel that with pulmonary arterial hypertension, the gold standard would be trying to have someone on combination therapy, often a combination of an endothelin receptor antagonist and a PDE5 inhibitor. And the evidence for those combinations is really growing, particularly over the last 2 to 3 years.
Are there problems with access to that here in Australia?
There have been big problems with access, and it's still challenging. It's been made a little bit easier because some of the pharmaceutical companies that work in this area have come forward with combination therapy programs that suitable patients are able to access. It's been very difficult before this time because patients have either had to pay for their second drug themselves.
Because the PBS only supports
the PBS,
one.
Yeah. Because these drugs are expensive, the PBS will supply one drug through that scheme.
So there are some new treatments available, aren't there? New drugs that are showing some promise?
Yep.
Tell us about those.
Well, we have, in terms of our endothelin receptor antagonist, the most recent one that's become available in the last couple of years is macitentan, which has been a fairly carefully designed drug designed to maximise its efficacy and minimise its side effects. Some of the aims were to try and engineer the drug to avoid some of the known side effects with the other drugs, particularly things around abnormal liver function. It's been studied in for what is for pulmonary hypertension quite a large study and has shown improvements in outcomes which have been a sort of composite outcome largely.
Anything else that's new?
So the other new agents that are really on the horizon are agents that are acting either through sort of more novel mechanisms or taking a different approach to some of the pathways that we already target. And the first of those is a drug called riociguate, which is a soluble guanylate cyclase stimulator. Our previous approach to trying to target the nitric oxide pathway has been to prevent breakdown of the intermediaries and therefore try and maintain the levels of nitric oxide as a pulmonary vasodilator and an anti-remodeling chemical by preventing the breakdown of metabolites in that pathway. So this approach is essentially saying, well, why don't we just directly stimulate that pathway rather than try to prevent breakdown in a nitric oxide deficient system.
Yeah.
So that certainly has shown some promise both in pulmonary arterial hypertension and also in chronic thromboembolic pulmonary hypertension, which is an uncommon cause, but it's a very important cause to recognise, which
right.
is why we included that in this narrative review. It was sort of almost a little bit off the topic of pharmacological therapy, but we think it is so important for people to identify this entity because it's potentially treatable surgically. It really does change outcomes. So it's one of those things where if you're thinking, does this person have pulmonary arterial hypertension, you have to think, do they have CTEPH? And make sure that you go through the appropriate steps to look at that. We also thought it was important to discuss that because there is some misconception about what the appropriate way to test for it is. Although a CT pulmonary angiogram is a great test for acute pulmonary embolism, for chronic thromboembolic disease, the test that we would normally recommend to screen for this entity is a ventilation perfusion lung scan. So those are the reasons why we included it. Coming back to Rio Cigarette. Yeah, as I said, this is, you know, a new approach, and that was studied in the Patent 1 study, where essentially looking at a 6-minute walk test distance as the primary outcome, they showed after 12 weeks of treatment there was an improvement there. That's, you know, one of the other drugs that's on the horizon. The third drug that is on the horizon is one acting through, if you like, the third pathway that we target in pulmonary arterial hypertension, and that's through the prostanoid vasodilator pathway. And so selexipag essentially stimulates the prostanoid prostacycline receptor. It's an oral drug, and it was examined in what was really the largest pulmonary arterial hypertension study to date. Important things to know about this study is that many of the patients in the study were already on other therapies. So right. If you like, this is add-on therapy to what our standard of care is, and essentially using a combination endpoint which included death, hospitalisation, disease progression, those things that we think are clinically important, there was a 40% lower risk of that endpoint with the use of selexipag. So at the moment, you know, we have this sort of aim to often have people on dual therapy. Maybe in the future, maybe we'll be able to have triple oral therapy. You know, that's my kind of crystal ball concept. But we obviously have to wait for the evidence before we go down that route. But I think, you know, it's a very exciting time in terms of pulmonary arterial hypertension treatment.
Looking 5 years down the track, say, is there a silver bullet there that everybody's aiming at? Is it surgical? Is it pharmacological?
I don't think it's going to be surgical. I think we're going to need a better understanding of this disease to have a magic bullet.
Yeah.
I suspect that what we're doing currently with the treatments that we have is we've looked for abnormal vasodilator systems within the arterial wall that are we can interfere with to try and promote vasodilation to prevent adverse remodeling of the blood vessels. But they're really, if you like, almost treating the symptoms, and maybe they're treating the final common pathway of some other process. I think that we're going to need an advance in our understanding of this disease, which is probably a combination of diseases, to actually find a better way of treating it.
Are there different kinds of PAH?
So there are certainly a number of different causes, and they share a lot of pathophysiological similarities, but there may well be, you know, differences in terms of what's actually happening at a cellular or an organ level. We know that there are familial syndrome and the genes behind those have to some degree been identified. People are working on ways of exploiting that knowledge. But for many people, we really don't understand, you know, what the initiating process is, what, you know, drives progression, that we can kind of switch off.
Is there anything that a pathway a GP can go through that will come to the conclusion that what their patient might have is PAH?
There are a couple of things to consider. The first is that shortness of breath is not normal, and we need to think about why someone is short.
Shortness of breath. On exercise or at rest?
Well, the symptoms of this disease begin on exercise, and in fact, even towards the latter stages, the symptoms are largely with exercise. So,
right.
Becoming abnormally short of breath with exercise and having reduced exercise tolerance is abnormal, and you need to pursue that symptom to have a reason for the patient having a symptom. The major thing around pulmonary arterial hypertension is that if you've looked at other forms of lung disease, if you've looked at cardiac causes, and you know, you haven't identified a cause, think about whether it could be pulmonary arterial hypertension. Having that clinical suspicion, I think, is really important. And sometimes that will direct your investigation or even help the clinicians who are say carrying out echocardiograms to focus on, could this be pulmonary arterial hypertension? So just raising that idea, even though it's an uncommon disease, is really important. Hopefully, with awareness, we can reduce that two-year lag in diagnosis so that treatment can be started earlier before there's irreversible damage to the pulmonary circulation.
Assuming everybody's on the best possible combination therapy, what's the prognosis then? How well can they get?
So the prognosis is, again, it's a moving target. You know, as we have advances in therapy, the sort of survival expectation of these patients is improving.
Yeah.
And until we reach the point where we study them down the track, we don't know.
Yeah.
I think we've certainly seen a huge change in this, though, in the last 10 years. It's always been a difficult area to run trials, and that's why initial studies have tended to focus on hemodynamic measurement or measures of exercise tolerance, like 6-minute walk test. It's only recently that we've demanded better levels of evidence for these treatments, and that's why there's been a move to important clinical outcomes such as death, such as escalation of therapy or worsening of symptoms, to try and show that the drugs do more than just make someone walk 20 metres further. We want value for money out of these treatments.
Thanks for your time.
All right, thank you. It's a pleasure.